Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, as you probably know, the Irish premiere of Gladiator 2 took place last night, and given the Irish connection, we all wish it well. But sometimes, big budget films can fall on their face, taking many careers with them. Tim Robey is author of Box Office Poison: Hollywood Story in a Century of Flops. Afternoon, Tim.
Afternoon, how are you?
Is it more or less likely nowadays that a film will flop? By which I mean, has the film industry in general become far more risk-averse than it used to be?
That's certainly true, but they're also much better at disguising their flops, because when they see that a film is coming along and they're worried it's going to flop, they can shunt it onto a streaming service, and then they don't have to declare any viewing figures. So we have no idea sometimes whether those films are flops or not.
Ah, but if a film is perhaps judge it's going to be a flop and they stick it onto Netflix or whatever, do the people associated with those films, do their careers suffer as much as if it was a very public flop?
I would say they don't suffer as much. I think when it's publicly a disaster at the box office and all the newspapers are reporting on that, that is going to do more damage to the careers of the actors and the directors and so on. So this is one way that the streaming services can protect people's reputations,
yeah,
actually.
A very dramatic example of that is Catwoman and poor old Halle Berry.
Absolutely.
An Oscar winner. Yeah. And then is that fair in a way that she has to, take the fall for a film that, let's face it, wasn't very good?
It's not really her fault, is it? I mean, I don't think the script was at all good, and she should probably have tried to get it, to be better, given that she was earning $14 million for that movie. That was her biggest payday. She just won her Oscar, and suddenly in the space of one film, she plummets and becomes, is really humiliated by it, actually. And it's because the film is in general terrible and a fiasco, and audiences were rightly warned off it by, like, really bad publicity.
Yeah. In the course of a production process, can it happen that a producer or a director will say, this really isn't working, we shouldn't go any further with it? Or, is it a case where the money's invested, we have to keep going now?
It depends. So sometimes it's too late, basically. And that's the case with the film Cutthroat Island, which I think is pretty fun as a film. But they'd already spent so much money on it and borrowed so much money, the company who made it. They borrowed 50 or 60 million already before they even started shooting. So when they lost their leading actor, Michael Douglas, who just jumped out of the film, they had no choice but to carry on. They had to recast him with Matthew Modine. And that's one of the reasons why the film was not a big box office attraction. The company also went bankrupt a couple of months later. But sometimes you can pull the plug at an earlier stage. For example, the same company wanted to make a film about the Crusades with Arnold Schwarzenegger in 1994. And Paul Verhoeven was going to direct it. And it was going to be this big budget epic. And they were going to pay $100 million to make it. They spent about $12 or $13 million. And then there were like huge fights between everyone involved. And they decided, we're not going to carry on. So they kind of threw that money away, basically. But at least it wasn't $100 million.
Yeah. One of the films you do write about in the book is Queen Kelly. Now, this dates from 1929. Its failure, is that in part, and I imagine there are many other films that suffered the same fate, because it was on the verge of the talkies?
That's exactly right, yeah. They started making it when the talkies were already coming in. And Gloria Swanson, the actress, and her director, Eric von Stroheim, just assumed that sound was just going to be this passing fad. And they were like, no, we'll do our silent movie and we'll make it the old-fashioned way. And they were really wrong about that. And then they were very slow to try and rectify it. They could have tried to fix the film, kind of convert it into a talkie, but they were too slow. And so that film lost all of its money. And it actually bankrupted Gloria Swanson, basically, for the rest of her life.
Oh, my word. Plus, yeah. Also, did they filmed all of it, or at least part of it, in Africa, and that threw up its own problems?
The African section, some of it was shot in sound stages rather than going to Africa. But there were so many weird clashes on the set between her and eventually she fired the director, Eric von Stroheim. But there's a nice little sequel to that story, which is that 22 years later, Billy Wilder brings Gloria Swanson out of retirement for Sunset Boulevard. And to play her butler and the guy who projects her films to her every night in the basement, if you remember, he cast Eric von Stroheim, the director of Queen Kelly, who projects, and the film we see him showing to Gloria Swanson down there in her private projection booth is actually Queen Kelly. It's their lost classic, yeah.
Okay, little bit of a private joke. Hopefully it's a joke rather than
picking at
an old wound. Maybe a more spectacular version of this that people would be familiar with is Dune, the original Dune, the David Lynch version of it. Was that a case where a guy who was a kind of relatively successful independent director, it was just too much for him?
Yeah, he wasn't really ready for shooting a film on that scale. He'd only done two features, and they were much smaller scale, Eraserhead and The Elephant Man, and he was very respected critically and within the industry. But they just decided that he was the man to do Dune, and he came up with some brilliant design ideas, and I think there are things about his version that are really quite spectacular. But the storytelling falls apart. It also tried to stuff the book into one film, which was really difficult to do, with the amount of story and characters and everything. Obviously, Denis Villeneuve has had a success with his adaptation, which was in two parts, because that's the way the book is sort of structured. But Lynch was trying to cram it all in, and it was chaos, that set as well. They shot the movie in Mexico. There was so much corruption. All of the dailies and the footage was being stolen at customs every day. They couldn't get things through, and they were having to bribe all these officials. Sting turned up to shoot his role and had five of his freshly recorded songs go missing. at the airport. It was chaos. And David Lynch really couldn't keep a handle on it. And also, they were trying to sell it as the next Star Wars. And anyone who's seen David Lynch's Dune, it's not Star Wars. It's way too weird. It's too adult. It's too perverse. The story is too complicated. You can't sell it to six-year-olds. And they still tried, and that was part of their failure.
It didn't really damage David Lynch's career, though, in that he went back to doing what he was good at.
Well, we're lucky that that happened, and it's because the guy who produced Dune, Dino De Laurentiis, basically said, you know what, I'm not giving up on you. I'm going to give you a much smaller budget to make your next film. It's going to be $6 million, and you can have Final Cut this time, but you can do whatever you want with it. And that's why he gets to make Blue Velvet. And Blue Velvet is his redemption. It's the one that points him forward to all the rest of the amazing work that he would then go on and do with Twin Peaks and Mulholland Drive and everything like that. But he needed to be rescued like that. And luckily, the same producer kept faith in him.
Yeah. It's also worth remembering as well that there's a certain amount of films that came out that were at least not successful at the time, like The Shawshank Redemption, but then had a second life and a sterling reputation decades later. Because I suppose of VHS.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, Shawshank Redemption didn't make money in the cinemas in 1994, but it was the number one video rental in 1995. The number one, because the word of mouth had got around and it got all these Oscar nominations. People started to talk about it as this kind of new classic. And there are quite a lot of other films like that, like The Wizard of Oz took about 10 years to make a profit. Citizen Kane was not a moneymaker at first. And there are even Blade Runner. Blade Runner didn't turn much of a profit. It was really fairly brutally treated at the box office because of E.T. coming out at the same time. Mm. Everyone went to see E.T. instead. But all of those films have, as you say, become regarded as classics over the years and been reissued, put back into cinemas, and over time, they've actually made a profit. So those ones I haven't included chapters on, actually. I don't classify them as kind of the purest form of flop because they've had their redemption, you know.
Indeed. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Tim. That was Tim Robey there, film critic with the Daily Telegraph and author of Box Office Poison, Hollywood Story in a Century of Flops.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.